Hello, and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. Quick announcement is that we have several faculty members who will be speaking in the next couple of weeks at different locations across the United States. Speaking will be Rabbi Daniel Landes, the director in Rosh HaYeshiva of Pardes, Rabbi David Levenkreuz, the director of special programs and a faculty member, and Rabbi Zvi Grummet, also a faculty member. San Diego, California, Rabbi Landes will be speaking this coming Friday through Sunday. In Chicago, Rabbi David Levenkreuz will be also speaking this coming Sunday, April 29th. In Boston, Massachusetts, Monday, April 30th, Zvi Grummet will be speaking. In Columbus, Ohio, David Levenkreuz will be speaking on Wednesday and Thursday, May 2nd and 3rd. In San Francisco, Rabbi Levenkreuz will be speaking on Shabbat, that's May 5th. And in Los Angeles, David Levenkreuz on Sunday, May 6th. Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, David Levenkreuz's tour continues with a talk on Monday, May 7th. In Washington, D.C., Rabbi Levenkreuz on Monday, May 7th as well. And then in New York, David Levenkreuz will be speaking on Tuesday, May 8th. I am including a handout, which will be the next transmission on the podcast network. So just check your iTunes or other software, and you'll be able to print out the PDF file. This week, Rabbi Schweiger discusses the double portion of Achrimot Kiddushim. Rabbi Meir Schweiger is a senior faculty member of Pardes and serves as a Mashkiach Ruchani, the spiritual guide for Pardes. And now, Rabbi Meir Schweiger.
This week, we have a double portion, Parshiyot Achrimot and Kiddushim. I would like to examine the end of Parshat Achrimot, and in particular, the Ramban's commentary on it. In chapter 18, verse 24, we are told the following. Al titamu b'chol eila, do not defile yourself in all these, because in all these the nations defile themselves, whom I am sending out before you. These is a reference to the prohibited sexual relationships described in chapter 18. And in fact, last week, we spoke about the idea of impurity, defiling oneself. Today I would like to focus on verse 25. And the land was defiled, and I remembered its sin upon it, and the land vomited out its inhabitants. There is a long comment by Nachmanides on this verse, which lays out a whole theology of the land of Israel. And let me go over this point by point. Nachmanides begins by implicitly raising a question. What is the connection between the section of prohibited sexual relationships, which are a personal obligation, which in no way are dependent upon the land, and the verse which I just read, which speaks about engagement in these practices defiling the land? It's one thing to speak about how by doing X, I defile myself, and we spoke about this at length last week. But how do I defile the land when this is not an action at all connected to the land? And perhaps to highlight this point, to sharpen it, if we look at the end of the book of Vayikra, in chapter 26, in the section that has the blessings and curses, and specifically I want to focus on the curses, chapter 26, verse 32. The ultimate expression of the curses is in verse 32 and subsequently when it says, "And I will make the land desolate, and your enemies will be desolate upon it, those who settle it. I will scatter you among the nations. I will empty out the sword against you. And once again, and your land will be desolate. Your cities will be in ruins. And in verse 34, then will the land be pacified for its sabbatical years, all the days of its desolation, and you will be in the land of your enemies. Then will the land rest and be appeased, be pacified for its Sabbaths. And once again in verse 35, all the days of its desolation it shall rest, for that which it did not rest during those years when you were living upon it. These verses are very understandable. We can fully understand the measure for measure. In chapter 5 and 25 in Leviticus, we are given the laws of the sabbatical year, of the Jubilee year, which we will discuss in another podcast. It is perfectly understandable that if the Jews do not observe the sabbatical or Jubilee years, that their punishment will be that the land will rest. Rest because the Jews have been exiled. Rest / be desolate, measure for measure, for our non-observance of this very fundamental commandment related to the land. But to come back to Nachmanides, what is the connection between sexual promiscuity and the land being defiled, the land vomiting us out? How are we defiling the land? And Nachmanides goes on to develop a whole theology based on numerous verses, which says the following: every land, every nation has a star, has an astrological sign, has some prince / angel that rules over it. And God, who is the God of gods, the master of master of the whole world, is above all of these configurations. All of that is true in terms of the world in general. But when it comes to the land of Israel, which is the portion of God, which is designated to his name, God did not place any angel to rule over it. In giving it as a possession to his people, who sanctify his name, God in effect said, you will be under my direct jurisdiction. Hence, in the land of Israel, we have a direct relationship with God. There is nothing intervening outside the land of Israel. We don't have that relationship. Let me illustrate this with a verse which appears in the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 11, verse 10. God says, for the land which you are coming to take possession of, is not like the land of Egypt, which you left. The land of Egypt, where you plant your seeds, where you water it with your feet, like a green garden. The land which you are passing into to take possession of is a land of hills and valleys. By the rain of the heavens you will drink water. And verse 12, it is a land which the Lord your God seeks out constantly. The eyes of the Lord your God are in it from the beginning of the year until the end of the year. These verses contrast the land of Israel with the land of Egypt with respect to water sources. In Egypt, the water source is the Nile, and all the tributaries that come from it. In the land of Israel, there is rainfall. And if we follow the Ramban's theology, the Nile is an intermediary that plays a major role in the destiny of the nation. In the land of Israel, there are no major water sources. The major source is rain. Rain which comes directly from God. For those who have difficulty with the concept of stars, astrological signs, guardian angels that have been designated to the nations, perhaps we can articulate it in a slightly different way. Every nation has resources, natural resources, that play a significant role in the development and the character of that nation. We could easily understand nations whose resources are silver and gold, diamonds, or perhaps what is most striking nowadays, oil, where those natural resources play a very significant role in the economics of the nation, and perhaps even shape the vision of the nation. What seems to characterize the land of Israel is a paucity, a lack of natural resources. Instead, there is this utter dependence on the most elementary level in terms of water upon God. And in that section in Deuteronomy, chapter 13 goes on with a section that we are very familiar with, the second paragraph of the Shema, which says that if we observe the commandments, serve God, we will get rain in its proper time. We will harvest our grains, our wine, our oil. We will be able to eat and be satisfied. But if we don't, we should beware that in the end, by worshiping idols, we will evoke God's wrath, and God will withhold the rain and ultimately cause us to perish from the good land that he has given us. These verses articulate how utterly dependent we are upon God in the land of Israel, how we have nothing to fall back upon except for God. The nature of this relationship places a heavy responsibility upon us. And as the Ramban goes on to say, behold the land which is the portion of God, vomits out those who defile it. It does not suffer, it does not bear idolaters, those engaged in sexual promiscuity. And perhaps to quote another verse, which Nachmanides did not quote, at the end of the book of Numbers, Bamidbar, chapter 35, verse 34. The context, the whole chapter discusses cities of refuge, murder, unintentional, intentional, the need to have to bring the perpetrators of the crime to justice. In verse 33, we're told, do not make the land hypocritical where you are. The blood or the spilling of blood makes the land hypocritical. The land will not be atoned for the blood which is spilled in it, unless the blood of the murderer is taken. This verse clearly echoes the story of Cain and Abel, of the blood which is crying from the ground to be avenged. And in verse 34 it says, "Do not defile the land where you settle, where I dwell in its midst. For I am Hashem, the Lord, who dwells in the midst of the Jewish people." This verse very clearly articulates, what does it mean to defile the land? Defiling the land is in effect driving God out of your reality. It is denying the presence of God in your reality. By engaging in the three cardinal sins, idolatry, murder, sexual promiscuity, we are defiling the land, which in effect means we are saying there is no place for God in this land. And hence one can understand the measure for measure. It's as if the land is saying, if you strip me of my soul, of the presence of God, if you don't allow God to dwell in the land, I will not allow you to dwell in the land. The land demands justice. The land demands its soul. And as the Ramban goes on to say, sinning in the land of Israel is worse than anywhere else. The consequences are far-reaching. The punishment, exacting. This places a very heavy burden on those who live in the land. And we can see this in the numerous passages which speak of the blessings and the curses. The land has unbelievable potential for blessing. But at the same time, when not actualized, it can bring about unbelievable curses. The Ramban develops this further based on statements from the Talmud, from Midrash, what would seem to be radical statements. One from Masechet Ketubot, 110b. Anyone who lives outside the land of Israel, it is as though they have no God. And in another version, it is tantamount to idolatry. A very powerful statement to be understood in light of what we mentioned earlier. But then Nachmanides quotes another comment from the Sifrei, the Midrash Halakha, on a verse which we read in the second paragraph of the Shema, from Deuteronomy chapter 11, verse 18. After it speaks of the Jewish people perishing from the land because of their non-observance of the commandments, they're engaging in idolatrous practices, the Midrash says the following: although I exile you from the land to the diaspora, excel in the performance of the commandments, so that when you return, they will not be to you a novelty. And then it goes on to give an analogy. What is this comparable to? To a king, a ruler, who is angry at his wife and sent her to her father's home, and said to her, while you're there, put on your jewelry, decorate yourself, so that when you come back, it will not be to you a novelty. In effect, and the Ramban articulates this explicitly, doing the commandments outside the land of Israel is so that they should not be a novelty when we come back. for the essential fulfillment of the commandments is for those living in the land of God. A very powerful statement. Perhaps the way to understand it in a modern context is a phenomenon which is becoming more and more popular. Virtual relationships. More and more people, youngsters, are becoming involved in having relationships, cyberspace relationships over the internet. On the one hand, it creates a certain safe space where you can communicate and say whatever you want. But I think that all of us would acknowledge that there's no way of equating, of comparing a virtual relationship with a real relationship. I don't know too many people who would like to be married in a virtual relationship. A virtual relationship is a mirror, it's an image, but it can never be a total experience. And this is perhaps how we should understand Nachmanides, when he differentiates between the land of Israel and outside the land of Israel. In the land of Israel, performance of the mitzvot is a total experience. What makes it that is that in the land of Israel, there is reciprocity. As we've articulated in the second paragraph of the Shema, in the blessings and curses, there is a sense of feedback. I perform the mitzvot, I get the rain in its time. It is not just me acting towards God. There's a sense of a real relationship. God is somehow responsive. One could say in the negative as well. When things go wrong, this can be seen perhaps as a sign from God that something is awry. This concept, the Ramban sees already in chapter 17 of Bereishit, when God enters into a covenantal relationship with Avraham and commands Avraham, walk before me, be perfect, and I will establish a covenant with you. What is that covenant? On the one hand, Avraham needs to do Brit Milah, but it goes far beyond Brit Milah. And on the other side, God promises him that he will increase him, he will make him into nations. But perhaps the most significant thing is, chapter 17, verse 17, I will be to you a God and to your children after you. I will give you the land of your sojourning to be an everlasting possession. And once again, I will be to you a God. And the way the Ramban understands it is that in the ideal, what God is saying to Abraham is that the land of Israel will not be like any other land. In every other land, there is no correlation between what people do and what happens. The land of Israel is supposed to create this fusion between natural law and moral law, religious law. Instead of these being two dichotomous realms, they merge and interplay with each other. This is the ideal vision. And perhaps one example of where this was actualized is in the story of Yitzchak in Bereishit, in chapter 26, verse 12. We're told that Yitzchak plants in the land of the Philistines, and in a year of famine produces a hundredfold because God blessed him. The vision is that somehow the land of Israel becomes this interface of the relationship between God and the Jewish people. It becomes the medium by which we now have this intense relationship, which is reciprocal. I didn't mention this in last week's podcast, but Nachmanides also brings down a rabbinic understanding that laws of leprosy, in particular, leprosy of the house, leprosy of one's clothing, tzarat ha-bayit, tzarat ha-beged, are only operative in the land of Israel because they reflect a feedback from God, which in a way is a blessing that reflects that intense relationship. But outside the land of Israel, there is a certain distance. The feedback is not so evident. Outside the land of Israel, we do not have that people relationship with God. It is more of an individual relationship with God. And as individuals, we don't get that instant feedback. We don't have that intensity of a relationship. This is a theme which appears in numerous places of the gap between the individual's relationship with God and the nation's relationship. Ultimately, God entered into a relationship with a nation, not just with individuals. Tomorrow, in fact, for me right now, it's another few hours, we will be observing Israel Independence Day, Israel's 59th anniversary. I subscribe to the belief that the creation of the State of Israel was a miraculous event, an act of God, a gift of God, for which we should celebrate, for which we should sing songs of praise, say Hallel. But it is important to realize that this wonderful gift also mandates a commitment, a responsibility. Our vision is to make this country, to make this state, a state not like any other state, to make the desert bloom, to create a holy society, a kingdom of priests. Our vision is to invite the presence of God in our land, to radiate that presence to the world outside, to create a model which anyone who sees will want to embrace and adopt and become part of. Each of us has to ask, whether those who live in the diaspora or those who live in Israel, what are we doing to further that vision? First and foremost, do we appreciate this unbelievable gift that we were given, this unbelievable opportunity to embark on that journey, to create a model for a more perfect world? And if we do subscribe to that vision, if we do value that gift, what are we doing to make it a reality? It is very easy to be critical. It is very easy to be dismissive. It is much more difficult to take action, to be proactive, to build rather than to destroy. Let us hope that more and more people will come to understand the unbelievable gift that we have, the amazing challenge which we have been presented with, and to rise to the occasion so that we can truly become a light unto the nations. Shabbat Shalom, Yom Ha'atzma'ut Sameach.
Thank you, Rabbi Schweiger. Your comments on the podcast are always appreciated. Please send your email to podcasts@pardesusa.org. As I mentioned at the top, please look immediately for the next podcast transmission so that you can print out the schedule of talks this week and in the next couple of weeks across the United States. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.